ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Friday. We've got our finalists at the T20 World Cup. It will be New Zealand and India. For all the marbles, the penultimate round of the Sheffield Shield's underway. There's a women's test match which starts today at the WACA ground. It also doubles up as the last time we'll see Alisa Healy in international cricket. My name's Corbin Middlemass. I am in Sydney. Ed Cowan is also in Sydney, and yet we're not in the same room, which I know my podcast co-host is a little snaky about. But good morning to you, Teddy.
Corbin, why didn't you just call me and say I'm calling the football? The big game that was on last night,
yeah.
Whatever, whoever played whoever. We've got a Friday podcast. Why don't you come into Ultimo? It's just down the road, across City Tunnel. I'd be there and you and I could have hugged it out and done this face-to-face because our chemistry is so much better when we're in person.
I apologise. I must admit I'm the sort of guy, I don't like disappointing people, as you know, so I'm sort of like late night the night before doing my teams for Friday night. I've got to go to the Gold Coast next. Rush in here, do a footy pod, then I've got a cricket pod, then I'm on a plane. So I was like, I didn't want you to come all the way in, and then I feel like the only time I get with you is on air, and then I'm leaving again. So that was sort of my thinking behind it, that I didn't want to give people false hope that I had time, which unfortunately I don't have a lot of that at the moment. I'm here for work. It's a business trip.
I could have done with a hug, but anyway.
Apologies. It's lovely to see you though through the screen as we usually do in the universe online. Have you got something for me off the top? I know you've been keen to spit this out.
Not that keen, but I did note that New Zealand have qualified for the World Cup final. And I can't remember. It was so long ago when we were making our predictions about which team aside from India could really make a charge of this. And I said New Zealand, and you kind of had that little glint in your eye like, that's stupid. And now I'm thinking, maybe not so stupid. Finn Allen, let me buy you a beer.
I can't believe how let down I've been here. So I feel like my prediction was more bold on England. And yet England were a better team than New Zealand in the tournament. They beat them in the tournament. They almost pulled off the greatest run chase in just about World Cup history. And yet they fell 7 runs short. And somehow the team that you picked is the team that's there waiting for them in the final. And so the team that I picked, who were on this unbelievable Cinderella run, somehow fell a stage short. And I'm now an Indian dinner down as a result of it. I'm going to have to cough up there. I couldn't believe it.
I love it. Honestly, no one remembers who gets knocked out in semifinals. You might as well get knocked out in the group stages. England, Australia, South Africa, they all get lumped in together of that.
Just the
World Cup of 2026 that no one will probably remember a single ball.
You're on the scrap heap of history, aren't you, when you go out in the semi-final stage. So Mumbai
last... Let's break it down.
Yeah. Mumbai last night. So 253 beat 246. I mean, this was what we thought the tournament was going to be leading in, and it delivered last night. So India clinch a 7-run semi-final thriller. Jacob Bethell almost led England to a record T20 chase. Will Jack's got Abhishek Sharma in the first over. Samson was then dropped by Harry Brook in the second over. He went on to make 50 off 26 and made 89, and in the end, that felt like the game. 250.
Do you reckon that drop catch cost them the game?
Had to have, didn't it?
Feels
guy gets like dropped in the second over, he makes 89. If he makes 50, they win.
And then the Indians took two. Like, if you actually weighed up the old adage, catches win matches, India took two great catches. England dropped a dolly and, 7 runs was the difference. Anyway, keep going. You're giving me a great little description.
Same guy involved twice. So Akshar Patel took a blinder, running back from the infield to deep cover, looking over his shoulder, somehow took it, sliding face down, head first towards the boundary rope. And then his second one was even better, where he stayed on his feet, but he's running at speed, about to head out of outside the boundary, takes the catch, and in the same motion as we've seen multiple times in the modern game, but at full pace, takes it, never breaks stride, whips the ball back to his teammate, and able to complete a superb outfield catch to get rid of Will Jacks, the partnership forming there. And in the end, they were the two catches which made the difference. They couldn't stop Jacob Bethell. He was run out in the final over for 105. 50 off 19, 100 off 45 balls. It's the first T20 international century in a semi-final lost, which is hardly surprising, but one of the quickest ever off just 43 balls, and really underlines his status as the future star batsman of global cricket. We saw him do it, obviously, in Sydney at the SCG Test match, and what a knock from Jacob Bethel, albeit in a losing cause. What jumps out to you, Teddy, on what we saw last night?
I mean, before we talk more broadly, Corb, I mean, Bethel, he has really announced himself in the last, you know, 3 and a bit months. This was someone, you know, we knew who could play. He scored a fantastic 90 in New Zealand, you know, a full 12 months ago. He had one ODI 100 only, so no four-day professional 100s under his belt. And here we are in a Ashes 100 at the SCG, a World Cup semi-final 100. And so, you know, this momentum of the next superstar of world cricket is certainly building. And between, you know, Bethel and Harry Brook, the future looks bright for England. There's no doubt about that, particularly in the short forms. But they both look fantastic players. So,
but how many three-format players are there nowadays? The proper elite batsmen across formats?
Well, very, very few, like less than a handful. But I think, you know, we've talked about this a little bit. I think Test cricket is converging pretty quickly with the shorter formats in terms of how the skills are being applied. For many years, they were kind of segregated. And so, that you know, your Warners and your Coleys were real standouts. You know, they were technicians in all three formats. And, you know, T20 and Test cricket require different techniques. Now the one technique's being applied essentially to all three formats, and we're getting a different type of three-format player. And you see a Travis Head, you know, Jacob Bethel. They're going about their business almost in exactly the same fashion.
Yeah.
So it is a little different and, you know, something to keep an eye on as that trend continues. So it was a few things come to mind. It was the same in the other semi-final. This was played on an absolute postage stamp. You know, so the two semi-finals were made for television, really, to have these 250 scores, and this was the game that delivered it. I think you pinpointed the key moments. That I guess the only other thing that stood out was it the 18th over that Bumrah bowled. You know, you give the ball to your world-class, you know, superstar, and they delivered. And that's what England probably lacked at the back end of their innings. So it was a great game of cricket.
Excellent.
India were pushed by, you know, an England team that was peaking at the right time. And you know, from write-offs at the start, it would have been a fairy tale. But at every time India have been challenged here, aside from that one little hiccup, they've had some fixtures to win here and they showed their class. So that they'll go in as absolute firm favourites, but who knows, in a T20 game, in a final, you just never know what's going to happen. One player can go off. Finn Allen did in that other semi-final, and you know, you've got a different shape of game on your hands.
Well, this is what New Zealand do, though, isn't it? This is their role, to roll up and be the other team in the World Cup final and sort of pointy ends of tournaments. It's not so much collecting silverware that's been the thing for the Kiwis over the years, but you mentioned Bumrah last night. I mean, in a game where 12 and over plays 12 and over, and in the end he goes for six, and you know, with three overs to go, and a team trying to hunt down 250 and looking like they're good things. You can't buy that. That's amazing.
Nope, that is world class. Cool. Pay every dollar for that.
So back to Kolkata the other night. You alluded to Finn Allen, fastest T20 World Cup 100 ever. So the previous one, by the way, was Chris Gayle, who did it off 47 balls. That was the record. He's done it off 33 in the semi-final stage of the tournament. New Zealand securing a place in the final, a dominant 9-wicket win. We were lucky enough to see him, obviously, in the Big Bash. We talked about how New Zealand went without him in the lead-up tournament, the bilateral series against India. And then to have him slot into that lineup and what he's capable of, I mean, what a knock.
And you saw it in the latter stages of the Big Bash. This is a guy that knows how to win games off his own bat. And, you know, he did that single-handedly. I mean, it felt South Africa were probably 50 short. You know, like there were balls that were flicking the outside edge of the bat and no one was running chase ball to the boundary. It was like it's North Sydney Oval, but with an outfield that's concrete.
Yeah.
So South Africa were restricted with the spinners. They lost wickets early, and they got their way to, you know, 160, but it needed a two handle in front of it, and particularly when you know, Allen and Seyfarth went absolutely berserko in the first three or four overs, and they were just playing good cricket shots. It wasn't risk taking chaos. And you looked up and they were none for 50 or four. You thought, well, this game's done. And then Finn Allen just iced it totally. You know, there were a couple of overs there that went for 20. You know, the thing that came to mind watching extended highlights were, it didn't really feel like a 33 ball 100. You know, there were no massive sixes. He wasn't taking dramatic risks. He just kind of hit the ball in the gap. You know, there were some great T20 shots for sure, but he didn't try and hit the ball too hard. They served up some length that he just kind of got a hold of. But it was a hell of an innings, and he paced it nicely. You know, he was, I think the 50 was off 19 balls. And so, you know, the last 20 came pretty quickly when the game was iced.
Yeah.
But they fielded well. There was only, you know, one, Glenn Phillips of all people, dropped a catch in the outfield. But aside from that, they fielded well. I thought tactically New Zealand were excellent, the way they set their matchups up, you know, the way they bowled, particularly with the very, very short boundary on one side. And South Africa were pretty average, having not lost a game the whole tournament. They played without the freedom, you know, and I absolutely hate the word chokers. I don't think it's fair, but they played the game slightly constricted, and so, you know, you can join the dots on that.
You can call it whatever you want, but yeah, unfortunately for South Africa, there it is. I mentioned the record, so fastest World Cup 100. I know that the World Cups do roll around every 2 years, and the game has changed for a period of time. I'm stunned that the fastest 100 previously at a World Cup until two nights ago was 47 balls. I mean, I would have thought someone in that time would have scored one quicker with, you know, the amount of associate nations that are involved. And, you know, that we've had World Cups in India in the not too different past and on good wickets with smaller boundaries. So it was Gale 47 balls, Gale 50 balls, the two fastest leading into the tournament. And really all the way up until the last two nights. And now we've had Bethel off 45 and Finn Allen off 33. That's the fastest hundreds we've ever seen. So I was a little surprised that we hadn't had quicker ones in World Cup history. Not to downplay the achievement, better than two a ball over 100 and representing your country. But did that surprise you a little bit?
I think it did. But what surprised me was how far the boundaries were in. And, you know, honestly, that New Zealand-South Africa fixture,
yeah,
it felt like some of those boundaries were 45 metres. I think the minimum's 50. It felt like it was 50 all the way around at one point. They were tiny.
Ahmedabad is the location, the Modi Stadiums, on what, Sunday night our time, or when you go to bed Sunday night, early Monday morning. So start.
Are they going to pack it out?
I hope so.
What is it, 130?
Something
130
like that.
Large?
Yeah.
All I can think about is Donald Trump, Virat Kohli.
That's right. And Sachin Tendulkar. I hope they do. I hope they do. Remember the test match that they played there, that they tried to fill it as much as they could, I think, for the first day. But let's see. Who are they playing? New Zealand. So England, India and New Zealand. See, I've given up on the tournament now that England has been eliminated. All right, let's leave the World T20 there. It feels like the Australians have been done for like 4 months, hasn't it? Like, this tournament's still going, and yet the Aussies were eliminated so early in the piece as it reaches its conclusion. Who do you like? Are you tipping the upset?
No.
Nah, neither am I. Yeah.
India. I would love to. I mean, that would be...
be something.
Yeah, imagine, just think about this. So New Zealand, not so long ago, went to India in Test cricket and clean swept them in.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about it at the time, but it was probably maybe their greatest cricket achievement. It would have to come close. Clean sweeping India in a test match series in India.
Better than World Test Championship?
Yeah, probably, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, it's all up there. And so imagine...
felt like the biggest upset since like Lake Placid when it happened. Like, I remember thinking like no one would possibly think that would
that's
go.
That's right. And then won the one-day series from memory. Don't quote me on that. They then... you know, in the lead-up to this tournament, were pretty poor, but didn't have their full-strength team in India. And here we are. We've got a showdown. So, I mean, they're a chance. I'd say it's 65-35. Like, I'm not full tilt India. So if things go their way, and they could well go their way, they're a shake.
I mentioned this line about the Sydney Swans last night. It reminds me a little bit about New Zealand cricket too, that they're like the other team in your favourite sports movie. So if you remember the movie and, you know, whatever team the lead character is competing on or whatever it turns out to be, they're the other team that often find themselves there. So we'll see if they get their storybook ending in India, perhaps this time around New Zealand. A couple of feedback questions from our listeners. The Traralgon Tiger was pretty quick to message me after he heard the news that the Pakistan players had been fined approximately $25,000 by the PCB for their T20 World Cup performance. So they weren't fined for their behaviour or anything like that. It was simply due to their performance and their exit at the Super 8 stage of the tournament that they have been docked a portion of their pay.
Oh, man, I hate it. It makes no sense to me. So each to their own, no judgment. But imagine, this is a group of players that probably feel far more pressure than any Australian cricketer's ever felt in their life. They have the weight of a nation, both in a sporting sense, in a political sense. So much of the identity of Pakistan is wrapped into their cricket team, and they would feel that. And I don't think the way selectors or the PCB or, how they rotate coaches, I don't think that helps the players feel settled and stable and be able to play with the freedom that they probably like. And, so I just don't know what this achieved. It feels like it's almost, like getting a parking ticket, and it feels like council revenue raising. Like, for what purpose would you fine the players for poor performance? I don't get it.
You wouldn't think it's going to help them perform better going into the future, would it? Think that your pay is going to get docked for that. It's all a bit whiffy. I'm not so sure about that. And Stu from Bondi says, I really enjoy your podcast, but I've been a bit disappointed that Eddie hasn't threatened to jump over the table and lamp you. So this is the Stuart McGill, Andrew Menzel bust-up. People would have seen it, I'm sure, in cricketing circles by now.
Are they doing a podcast together? Like, what's the vibe there?
I think so, yeah. I think that's the
odd couple, to say the least.
Mm. But Stuart McGill, he's obviously the headline in all of this. He's the guy with the profile and the former international cricketer. I mean, it was. What did you think when you saw it? Teddy is a former teammate of yours, I'm sure, on various occasions.
What did I think? I'll keep this short. I would be lying if I said I hadn't seen that side to Stuart over the years as a teammate. So I wasn't surprised. I think, he's always been someone, if you push the wrong buttons, you can certainly get a response that you couldn't dream of. But that was mixed with a lot of care and love and attention to the team. So it's a real mix of emotions. He's had a tough run, so it's hard to comment what gets wrapped up into what. I don't know why it went to air in the end. But anyway, that's not for me to decide.
Doesn't look like a whole lot of fun to be doing that, does it? I mean, we're lucky enough. We've done this together for a number of years now. I like to think there's a healthy level of respect, and you sort of,
friendship.
You disagree at times, and yeah. I don't know. We disagree most episodes. I think that's all part of it, but... it was all a bit unedifying, I think, for everybody involved in that particular spat. Just on some T20 adjacent news, Adam Zampa out of contract. So spent the last 3 years with the Gades. This comes at the same time where Nathan Lyon, Callum Stowe and Matthew Spores are not among the 9 players that have been retained. So that means there's no spinner still with the Renegades. Cam White sort of publicly came out and said, look, no one's upset with anyone, but I think Adam's just exploring his options at this particular stage. I don't know, my eyebrows raised a little bit there where you think, well, unless it's sort of purely a financial dispute over where they think the contract's at, if you haven't got a spinner and you need a spinner and you've got Adam Zampa and he's the best white ball spinner in Australia, why is he not retained by the team and looking to go somewhere? It just feels like that there's got to be some level of discontent or that Adam Zampa doesn't want to play there as to why he hasn't been signed up or the Renegades don't want him. And if that's the case... I don't know, you would have thought the Renegades need more good players, not less.
They definitely need more good players, not less. I mean, you get a sense that they'll go deep into probably two international spinners and run that as a bit of a playbook. I mean, we know, you know, Docklands has been a hard place to play, particularly for the first, you know, half of those seasons that he's been there. I don't know. It's hard to kind of comment without knowing the general ins and outs. Also think, you know, he is a bit of a FIFO cricketer these days. He, you know, does his thing and he goes up and, you know, even his experience with New South Wales, he's around at the moment, but he's not playing in their white ball team last week. I don't know if he'll play in the final or not. I've got no idea, but he's, you know, not available for Shield cricket, I imagine. So, you know, in terms of he's a great team man, but it is also hard, I imagine, in many senses. But maybe that's the new age of big bash cricketers and short form cricketers. It is all fly in, fly out. So maybe he had a long affiliation with those Melbourne teams, and he feels like he needs a break. But he'll be in hot demand for that period. It wouldn't surprise me if he ends up at the Heat or one of the Sydney teams, just given proximity and family to where he lives. But who knows?
All right, the Sheffield Shield still on domestic cricket. I know you love the Shield, Teddy, and what a fascinating round of fixtures that are already underway. So we've got Tasmania and Victoria at the Belgrave Oval, Queensland are playing WA at AB Field, and South Australia up against New South Wales at Carrin-Rolton Oval. There is one more round to come after this, and then the final takes place on the 26th of March, which will be at Junction Oval, where Victoria will host that. The question is, who will they play? I know it feels like we always start with New South Wales, but I think when Travis Head's opening the batting, it's fair that we start with the New South Wales South Australia game here. So
I love that he opened just before you even get into this. It would have been so easy. So, you know, after the season he'd had, opening the batting to just go, it's much easier at 4 or 5. I'm going to bat down there, and we've seen previous Test openers do that. The fact that he turned up in Shield Creek and opened the batting, it just speaks volumes to Travis Head and how he thinks about it. I love that. That's actually the thing that shone out from day one. So there's a good game of cricket going on as well.
I mean, on the back of the summer that he's just had, plus the fact that he's doing this, the last time he played domestic cricket, which was pre the Test series, he played obviously in the middle order. Should we just wrap our heads around the fact that, hey, this guy's the opening batsman for Australia? So what we're looking for at the moment is, if it's not Jake Weatherall, someone to partner him, or a place in the middle order to replace Usman Khawaja. We're not looking for anyone other than Travis Head up the top.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a statement. Loved it.
Yeah. 269 posted by New South Wales, so batting first in this game. It's really, and they got that 269, you know, a little bit from everyone, 47 from Joel Davies and 40 from Abbott. Henry Thornton, who I think is a native New South Wales, isn't he? Yeah, 5 for 71. Playing for the Sackers, and then they were one down last night. They've lost another one early in the new morning. So that we're recording live just after 11 o'clock on what is day two of these fixtures, Eastern Daylight Time. So the night watchman's out. So two down with Mick Sweeney and Henry Hunt there. This is an interesting game in the context of the table, Teddy. So New South Wales, a mathematical chance only, but South Australia are obviously the defending champions, well and truly in contention. They're only really, less than a point behind Queensland in third.
Yeah, they are. And so you can see a world where if South Australia win this, I think they play Victoria in the last round, and Victoria no doubt will probably rest some players, I imagine, before the final. So there would be a big push on there, you know, and a chance to go back-to-back, which is, you know, an incredible achievement. But, you know, all three games are in the balance, really. And this particular game, definitely a toss of the coin after first innings. All three games, no batting bonus points. So, you know, the table as it evolves will rely on wins. So if New South Wales win this and Tassie win as well, and we'll come to that fixture, then four teams can challenge to make the final to meet Victoria. So this is a super interesting round of Shield cricket as far as it goes.
The Queensland game, so Western Australia 210, Queensland 3 for 47 as we record this. So WA...
in the balance. Yeah. Toss the coin there as well, folks.
Big time. Sam Fanning, who I think we both like, opening the batting, made 62. Wickets shared around. Jem Ryan got three of those. His brother's a footballer, by the way, so I know you'd be keen to know that.
That's
place
your
for
third
Richmond.
Football reference. I know we're in the season's officially kicked off, but not everything has something to do with...
Three for 47, yeah. Queensland, with Matt Renshaw opening the batting. What do you make of Renshaw back up the top?
Well, I love it. Why wouldn't you open the batting and push for selection from there? Excellent. Particularly in the team, how it stacks up, he's either opening or batting five.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no way Usman was going to open the batting, and so Marnus is going to bat at three, and so why wouldn't you get out there and have a bat? Because there's a world where, you know, it's flat and they get some runs and you can't actually put your name up in lights.
Who do you like more there, South Australia or Queensland?
To make the final?
Yeah.
Ooh, can you ask me on Monday? I think...
So last round, by the way, as you said, South Australia play Victoria. Queensland go to Tassie, who, by the way, aren't out of it. We'll mention that game in a minute.
Yeah, I mean, there's a world where that last fixture in Victoria, they produce an absolute pancake. So on my mind is, yeah, even if South Australia win this, they just have an absolute bat fest on that last round. Not that that's much of a thing these days, and kind of bat them out of the Sheffield Shield. So, but I think
they've already started.
I think South Australia have momentum. Head, Carey, yeah. You know, I'd probably, and an excellent, they proved last year and this year, that they've probably got the best fast bowling quartet going around. So I'd probably, if I had to bet on it, it'd be South Australia.
The Shield final, by the way, clashes with the start of the IPL. So Shield final begins 26 March. Mm-hmm. 28 March is the start of the IPL. So obviously that'll have ramifications for the IPL guys. I imagine from that point on. Interestingly, the guys that are available and aren't available. So yeah, for WA, for example, Inglis not available in round 10, but he's playing this week. Conley's in. Green's going to play round 10 before heading off to the IPL. Renshaw, as we said, came back from the World T20. Is available. Travis Head's playing here. No Smith. Bartlett is playing round 10 but isn't playing this particular week, so we're starting to see a few more of the guys filter back the contracted players, obviously, after the World T20. That Tasmania game, so Victoria making 222 at the Belrive Oval, which a little hat tip to the late, great Richie Benno. 6 for 75 Tasmania in response, so Tassie up against it against the Victorians. 93 for Sam Harper. What a summer he's having. He's keeping and opening the batting, and scoring runs are plenty in the process too, which is so rare in red ball cricket at any grade.
And at a pace.
Amazing.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you talk to wicket-keeper batsmen, and they actually like opening the batting after wicket-keeping. You know, they've been in the groove of seeing the ball out of the bowler's hand all day, and so sometimes, you know, while often you say, oh, they're tired, and you know, it's very hard to do. So if you actually speak to these guys, and the games are moving so quickly, it's not as though they're keeping for 150 overs like they used to. They actually don't mind it. So, you know, you win the toss and bat, or you have to bat first, you get sent in, you're fresh as a daisy, and then you go and wicket keep the next day. And conversely, you go keep for 65 overs. You actually, a lot of them feel as though they're in the groove. Mm. You know, it's a different skill set, but it's the same. You're getting the same viewing all day. You get a great sense of the wicket. So
you got to be super fit. Like the amount of concentration. It'd be like race car drivers, for example, where you know, people sort of think, oh, hang on, they're sitting down all day. You think, man, to be able to concentrate for that long a period of time just means that you'd have to be so physically fit.
Without doubt. So I don't want to take anything away. I was just trying to give
a little bit more
context. Yeah. But he's the type of player who's really... There are certain players that come on a bit later and they should be rewarded for amazing domestic seasons, because across all formats, he's probably been the standout playing in many respects. So and there are lots of keeper batsmen. You know, you talk about Inglis. I think we're still not sure on his red ball batting credentials. You talk about Philippi, much the same. And so there are some great people challenging Alex Carey, but who is that next player? And maybe it is Sam Harper. How old is he? Late 20s,
yeah. I mean, it goes to show how good Alex Carey is, though, isn't it? And the gap that he's got between the rest. And like you said, it's not as if everybody else is poor. You know, all those guys are probably, you know, some of them slightly, some of them better than that average, you know, domestic cricketers. And yet there's still a long gap between them and the elite of the elite, which is Alex Carey in the position. So I'll lock you in for South Australia then, Teddy, to play Victoria in the final.
Well, no, you said out of those two. I haven't ruled out those two, it's most likely, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Tassie got a bit of work to do. Six for 80.
How about we just reconvene on Monday and make a real crack of it?
Here's a different question for you. Who's more likely to beat Victoria in a final?
Played at the Junction.
I think that's Queensland.
I think that's Queensland with the big game players. If you've got Renshaw, you've got Labuschagne, you've got Khawaja, three guys with test quality. But yeah. Do they have the fast bowlers? Maybe not. Who knows?
If Bartlett comes back. And yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But we'll see how we go. There's a one-day final to be played somewhere in all of that on March 11. So we'll see what happens there between New South Wales and Tasmania. Nathan Ellis, a chance to play for Tasmania. So that'll obviously help the Tigers. To the WACA ground, the day-night test, which starts at 4:30 first ball Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Coverage through ABC Listen. We're on air from 4 p.m. Australia up against India, the conclusion of that multi-format series. It'll also bring the curtain down on the illustrious career of Elisa Healy. Elise Perry's got a little fitness test. If she plays, there'll be very few changes to the lineup that last played test cricket for Australia. The interesting news which caught my attention, Teddy, when we walked out of our record on Monday, is that Sophie Molyneux won't be there. She's got a back injury. So, you know, I was hot on this at the time when they announced her as the next captain of Australia. It's not that she's not a great leader or she's not a great player or anything like that, but she just hasn't been able to stay on the park. And as she returns here after a leave of absence, she can't make it through the multi-format series again with injury.
Yeah, it's a big watch, that's for sure. So, just for my own maths, there's no winning or losing draws. If it's a draw, Australia win the multi-match series.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Last one, Teddy, before we go out, but good luck to the Aussie women there playing that test match over in Perth. And as I said, coverage available through ABC Listen. Melinda Farrell's tweet, going back to the start of the, or around the T20 time when Australia were about to get exited from the tournament. And I flagged this at the time. I thought it was an interesting broader conversation, which we love to have here on the ABC Cricket Podcast. She tweeted, "Australian cricket culture is the most insular of experience around the world. Very limited coverage with few notable exceptions and an overarching theme that hardly anyone cares," talking about the T20 World Cup, "especially with football around the corner and the Winter Olympics on. There are no Australian journos touring apart from CA's in-house team, and you have to seek it out to watch it. It's like an invisible tournament that few care about, and it can afford to be in some ways. Cricket has a huge casual following here for 2 to 3 months, but struggles to cut through the rest of the year, apart from 2 or 3 test tours and the latter stages of a 50-over World Cup. Have seen suggestions that having one every 2 years is overkill, and I get that point, but again, it's an insular view. What difference does it make to associates or less rich boards? Are Australian fans more important than the Nepalese or Zimbabwean fans or the potential US market? Again, this isn't meant as criticism. It's just a very different experience here. If Australia are knocked out tonight, it might cause a few small ripples, but I'd be surprised if there's any stronger reaction." What do you make of all that around Australia's sort of broader cricket culture, do you think, beyond? I mean, we're here, yeah, catering to the hardcores, and we're here every week, obviously, talking about the game, which we love. But what do you make of that?
I don't necessarily agree with everything that was said. It feels a little strong. I think some of the sentiment resonates. But what we know about Australian cricket culture is it is test-centric. We love test cricket. And that is the centerpiece of both our summers and how the emotional psyche of the Australian cricket team sits within society. So that's our starting point. So a world T20 every 2 years doesn't resonate, because there's, I think the other thing with Australian sport more broadly and its supporters is we've got a pretty good nose for any kind of sport that doesn't necessarily have real meaning or legacy, or it's a very tribal sporting culture, and that's why we love the Ashes and we love the Border Gavaskar Trophy. We don't love triangular one-day series in Darwin in August. We might to watch, but we don't care about it. And that's just how the Australian sports fan is. And so, yes, I think they care far less for this T20 World Cup than they do other tournaments.
It's also the way it was delivered to us when it started, wasn't it? Like, rather than when it began, people saying, hey, this is an exciting new format for the game. We had a lot of traditionalists in this country and you know, older cricket people basically come out and say, oh, it's all hit and giggle. It's all a muck around. It's going to destroy Test cricket. We hate it. It's no good. And you think, well, if that's the jumping off point, it's hard to kind of try and attract new fans. And it's almost like I feel people in this country almost treat it as a badge of honour to say, oh, I don't really care about T20 cricket. It's like, well, great, mate. Might be the only form of cricket that we've gotten. It's certainly the form of cricket that's keeping, you know, the cricket we love, Test cricket, going. I feel like if you're a proper cricket fan, you love all forms of cricket.
I agree with that. And I agree with the sentiment, maybe not entirely with everything. I mean, just as a basic side point, if this was every 4 years, I think I would care more.
Yep.
Because the next one in Australia in 2028 or
5 minutes. You know,
It's in a hot minute.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what the FIFA World Cup does is the 4 year cycle, you can still have important other trophies to win, but every 2 years it just loses its meaning by virtue of the fact that you're world champions for a hot minute and all of a sudden you're preparing for the next one. So without that context, I think people struggle to engage with it. And yes, that might mean that some players miss out on playing in one, or, you know, some countries miss out in hosting one for a long period of time. But when it's just this constant events fodder, it becomes white noise. And you can put the two words World Cup and still make it meaningless. And that's kind of what's happened with the T20. Because it wasn't every 2 years to start with. They just decided that it was a cash bonanza and they just plugged it in.
Do you think Cricket Australia should be more concerned about it than what they are? Like, I agree with the point about the 2 to 3 months a year. Like, it feels. I mean, you joke with me all the time about footy and how, you know, obsessed, you know, the southern part of the country is, particularly about Australian rules football. It dominates the landscape for 9 to 10 months, and cricket basically gets a window in December and January, and that's about it. Like,
I don't agree with that. Were you at in Adelaide when people were storming the ground at the Sheffield Shield? Like, just because they're not turning up Saturday, it's just a different rhythm to it. So I think people care. People listen to our podcast weekly. We're in the middle of March, and the numbers are still as strong as they were in January.
Yeah.
Like, but people care deeply. It's just how it turns up.
Mm. But why doesn't it demand more column inches and get more coverage and people talk about it beyond us?
Hang on. The business model is global. There are no journalists left, basically. There's one basic full-time cricket journalist that is on the books of the newspapers. There are a couple of independents who are, you know, brilliant but doing their thing. The media industry more broadly is dying, and we're in a global game. And so it's very different to the insularity. You want to talk about insular fandom? Look no further than your mates who cover the AFL. Like, that is the most insular view of sport you could possibly have. And yes, it works in our tiny little market in a game that's played nowhere else. It works. So I'm not denying that. But I think we're more global than you can imagine, because to be a cricket fan in Australia means that we watch England play India at Lord's late at night, and we've got our cups of tea in our rug because it's a beautiful game to enjoy. But it's a global game. And so the fact that there are peaks and troughs to the Australian summer also mean that you can enjoy it throughout the year for other forms of the game and other formats of the game.
Yep. I agree with some of that. There's other parts. We'll agree to disagree.
There's parts of it that I
feel like, more people come and chat to me around the water cooler about how Carlton went on the weekend or whatever than they do about the West Indies in England, or, you know, whether how Australia went at the World Cup and whether it kind of breaks through as much as it should. Sometimes I feel like these sports, I mean, you see how Volandis does it, and maybe this is the modern state of the world or whatever, where it's like, let's just come out and spruik what we do. And, Volandis does it, even though you could fact check, 20 things that he says every single time he fronts up to a press conference. Like, and Todd Greenberg's a great leader to be able to, have, and he's a good mouthpiece and everything else. But maybe we need to just tell people a little bit more about, hey, this is what cricket's great, cricket's good, this is what's happening in cricket, and whatever it turns out to be. It feels like we certainly don't do that as much as the NRL or the AFL in the way that we put it out there.
That we can agree on. Cricket, how cricket tells the stories, of the game and of the players.
Yep.
Honestly, in a game so rich in history, does it so poorly.
I think the average...
I know that frustrates you. It frustrates the hell out of me.
Drives me insane. It's sort of... Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here talking about cricket twice a week in the depth of winter with you, Teddy, unless, you know, we cared about it and loved it. And, yeah, sometimes you sort of think if that is the case, we should be telling people, because what happens nowadays is if you say it long enough, doesn't matter whether it's true or not, people start to believe it. And then all of a sudden your sport gets minimised over time and becomes a niche sport rather than, you know, commanding a huge piece of the mainstream market. That'll do us. Teddy, as a broad chat to finish, I've got a flight to catch. Sending all my love. I will catch up with you hopefully in person very soon.
No way. Love you, Cole. Later.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.